You tuned to New Sound Radio, 92 FM. This is the Community Hour. And I'm Pete Day, wishing you a happy new year. Hope you had a great one. Well, that festive period is all pretty much over now, isn't it? We're keeping the spirit alive here in New Sound Radio. Got a special programme for you lined up today. Going to be doing a review of last year. Looking back at some of the things that we reported here on New Sound Radio, on the Community Hour. Some good things, also some maybe, well, a bit troublesome things as well. But good fun, that's for sure. Been looking at plans to close fire stations here in East London and people's response to that. Controversial plans for new river crossings across the River Thames. And also a group of young mothers in Stratford who face homelessness. It's terrible. Also going to be looking at when I met up with one of East London's iconic performers as well. Singer, songwriter and actor. And I met up with him, of course, under the Caddingtown flyover of all places. So it's a great programme, so stay tuned for that. That's it. Well, before we do anything else, we always like to have a... Okay, now, I want to get on. Got loads of things in today's show, but I want to look at really one of the big stories really over the last couple of years, when it's plans underway to move West Ham to the Olympic Stadium in time for the 2016-17 season. Yeah, and with 2013 last year, what we saw is that if you go down the stadium, you see it's all starting to change already, with the conversion work already on the way, with the most visible thing obvious of that is removal of the great big floodlight towers. Yeah, now the deal is that West Ham Football Club will pay an upfront £15 million for a 99-year lease, and then £2 million a year after that. But I don't know, these figures are quite small fry, really, compared with that £429 million it cost to build the stadium and the conversion costs, which are thought to reach another £190 million. We're talking big bucks here, aren't we? Now, conversion plans include reducing the seating capacity from 80,000 to between 54 and 60,000, with retractable seating, allowing the venue to be converted from a football stadium into an athletics arena within days. Now, the seats they're going to do is slide over the running track to bring West Ham fans closer to the action. Now, this has been a big issue with fans ever since the plans were first announced. Now, the funding has certainly been one issue here, with Newham Council controversially putting up a £40 million loan to help finance the deal. And another number of commentators have also voiced their concerns that there are inadequate safeguards in place to ensure that the current owners of the club do not cash in by selling the bowling ground as a valuable piece of real estate and making a quick profit at the taxpayers' expense. However, a few months back, I went down to the bowling ground to find out what ordinary Hammers fans made of this all.
I'm happy with the atmosphere at the Upton Park, to be honest. Everything's around here, the pubs, the restaurants, the cats and everything. I've been coming here for years now, I've got my same group of people sitting around me, so it's like a little family.
Well, I shall miss this place, but I think it'll be all right. As long as I can get nice and near the front, if I get a good seat, I get a good seat. If I don't, I don't.
Don't agree with it, to be honest. I mean, if they move in 3 years' time and we play someone like Wigan, how are you going to get 54,000 people to sit and watch West Ham v Wigan? I just don't see it myself. I don't know, I don't like the whole idea, this whole retractable seats. I think it might lose the atmosphere a bit. I like the fact that when you're here, sure, all the players get to hear all the banter amongst the stands. It might lose that sort of factor going to the Olympic Stadium.
I've been coming here for over 50 years. It's been a lovely old ground, but the environment is not the same as it was when it was first built. Most of these people around here don't come from West Ham anymore. I come from Colchester. Most of us travel down here from out in Essex or elsewhere. We need better transport links. We need a ground that can expand. Here, it's outlived its purpose. As much as I love it, but it's time to go.
Not for me. I would sooner be here, quite frankly, yeah. Mr. Sullivan and his cohorts, they're in it for the money. That's my opinion, you know. but such is life.
I've got mixed feelings. We won't own the ground. What's going to happen to all the money when this is sold?
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. We're going to get a bigger stadium. We're going to attract a lot more fans, and we go up and up and up.
As in football always, you know, today, do you know what I mean? Football ain't football these days, is it? It's all a big commercial business now. It's not really directly aimed at the fans. It's all about the money that's involved in football these days in general, I think. It's going to be upsetting, do you know what I mean? Upton Park's been our home for many, 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 many years now, and it's going to be sad to see us leaving here, Green Street, do you know what I mean? But bigger and better things ahead, hopefully.
I don't like it. I'd sooner come here. They're doing it for the money. These big stadiums, so far away from the action, made their mind up now and that's it. So whatever we say, make no difference.
Absolutely marvellous. Brilliant for the club. Get a few more supporters in there. Get a few more away supporters in. I think the atmosphere will be absolutely marvellous.
My name's Andrew. I sail over land and sea, the West Ham fanzine. My heart will be gutted to leave this place. My head says it's got to happen. The seating over the track has softened the blow a little bit. But
could you just explain, people who don't really understand how that works, can you explain how that's going
to
work?
I was worried that we'd be so far from the pitch that you wouldn't be able to see anything, but fortunately they're getting the temporary seating installed over the track, so that should make it a little bit better. But
and that's the running track that goes round at the stadium, yeah? Right. And originally they were just going to leave that there. Now, and what is it they're proposing now they're going to do?
They're now putting some temporary retractable seating over the track on the football match days here, and they can take it back during the summer for the Athletics, so makes it a little bit better for us. But we'll still be sad and disappointed and gutted to leave Upton Park, that's for sure.
Why?
Because all of our history, our memories, the atmosphere of the place, it'll be heart-wrenching to leave all that behind, that's for sure.
And what do you think the driving force behind all this move is?
I think a genuine desire to progress the club forward, to make us grow, to make us compete with the top clubs. Obviously, it will line our owners' pockets as well, so they've got that interest. But yeah, it's to build a bigger future for the club, I'd hope.
Now, some people have said, well, maybe what could be happening with the owners here, what they're going to do is they're going to move to the stadium there, they're going to sell the Upton Park ground, and then they're going to cash in and then just disappear. What do you think of that?
I wouldn't rule it out, that's for sure. Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out.
And what do you think could be done to stop that all?
I'm not sure there's a lot that can be done, to be honest. I mean, obviously, the local council are likely to favour that, so they can get some development and regeneration in the area. Small businesses maybe putting up a fight against it, but
how do you mean small business? What's the problem there?
I suppose, you know, your little local chip shops around here and your supermarkets and your news agents and people like that, you know. Obviously you've got the pie and mash and chip shops in the Barking Road there, but hey, that's life, got to move on.
And finally, one reason to go to the Olympic Stadium, what would that be?
The future, to take the club up to the next level, to make the most of our supporter base, and let's compete with the big boys, bring it on.
And let's hope that West Ham United win a few more games. They could do with winning a few more games before they go to the Olympic Stadium. At the moment, they've just moved down into the relegation zone. So, West Ham, come on there. Come on, you Hammers. OK, stay tuned, because after the break, we're going to be looking at proposed river crossings across in East London, across the River Thames. Yeah? Stay tuned. It's Engine News Sound Radio, 92 FM. This is the Community Hour, and I'm Pete Day, bringing you a special programme looking back at all the different events that happened in and around East London throughout last year. Now, last year, one of the most controversial debates centred around the various plans put forward for additional Thames River crossings in East London. Now, everybody seemed to agree that there was a need for better access across the water. But whether it's ferries, bridges, tunnels, and most controversial of all, what sort of traffic should be allowed to use them, is where the argument started. Now, Transport for London, they published their plans at the beginning of the year, but these were criticised by local people and environmental campaigners for encouraging more road traffic and the resulting pollution from that. Meanwhile, Newham and Greenwich councils came up with their own plans, which favoured additional road bridges rather than increasing public transport links. New Sound Radio 92 FM, we went down and met up with some of the people involved and tried to get to the bottom of it all.
My name is Conor McCauley. I'm the executive member at Newham Council for Regeneration and Strategic Planning. Oh, we need more river across East London, particularly to unlock the economic potential of East London. We believe there's at least 40 development sites and up to 20,000 new jobs that could be created if we can unlock the sites both north of the river and south in Greenwich and Bexley. And so it's important we have that connectivity to enable that economic growth to take place.
Now, of course, what there have been is some increases in terms of public transport across the river. Isn't this something you think that should be supported more rather than road crossings?
There has indeed been significant investment in public transport, with the Jubilee line and the DLR lines across the river, and of course Crossrail across the river as well. And that's all been good for public transport. But frankly, it's commerce we're interested in at the moment. It's a white van man. It's commercial activity across the river. That's not well served by the additional public links. We need more road links, I'm afraid.
Of course, cost. Here we are. We're in a time when economic restraints and things like that, very difficult to find some money for this. How's this all going to be paid for?
Well, that's possibly a matter for TfL, but a tolling option could make it much very, 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 very doable.
And in terms of tolling, would that include what are currently free crossings, things like the Blackwall Tunnel?
That's a matter for TfL. But one of the things we would encourage, if there was a tolling regime, would be differential tolling, so that local residents in the nearby boroughs across the river would have a much reduced rate, and as a way of deflecting traffic coming in from Dartford.
So, just to be clear, though, is Newham Council in favour of tolls across river crossings in East London?
Yes, we are.
And do you think that's going to be popular with the local electorate?
If there's a distinct advantage to them, as I think there would be, yes, I think they would like that.
When you talk about tolls, what sort of tolls would we be talking about here?
I wouldn't even want to dream and speculate about levels at this point. But it's simple. Either you have a tolled crossing or you have no crossing. That's the option we've got at the moment. And I think a bridge at Galleons with a small toll for local traffic and an increased toll for a regional traffic would be much, much welcomed by local residents.
But just looking at tolls, yeah, obviously Newham Council won't be fixing these tolls, but what would, say, be the maximum toll that Newham Council would be?
I am not going to go into that territory. We have to look at that at the time once the crossings are built, and we're talking quite some years away yet.
What do you see as being the major benefits of putting in more road crossings in East London rather than making better use of public transport? I'm thinking in particular of, just up the road there, the cable car. Now, at the moment, the cable car, it's underused. It's kind of increasingly becoming seen as a tourist attraction rather than a serious form of transport. That's partly to do with the ticketing arrangements, in that the Oyster cap doesn't apply to it. Also, you can't use your Freedom Pass. And also, your travel card can't be used on it as well. What do you think of that?
Okay, well, you're really mixing up the subjects. The cable car does nothing for a white van man. If I'm a businessman and I have a business and I want to transport goods or services across the river, the cable car doesn't do it for me, nor does the Jubilee line on the DLR. I want to be able to drive to my business to deliver the goods, to bring the services together across the river, and that's why we need fixed crossings.
What would you say to some local people who are saying that, well, okay, if we put these new road crossings in, it will increase the amount of traffic in the area, which will lead to calls for wider roads, bigger roads to be built. And in the end, what you'll end up is just disjointed communities being cut up in this gridlock pattern, which is motorways running through them. What would you say to that?
Disjointed communities is an interesting phrase. There are 17 fixed road crossings across the river west of Tower Bridge, two east of Tower Bridge. The river is the biggest cause for disjointment in this part of London, and we really need to bridge that. And that's the whole point, to stop having disjointed communities.
And finally, yeah, if there's one reason that people should support road crossings across the river, what would that be?
Economic growth in this part of London. Much needed. And the fixed road crossings here would serve that agenda very well.
Conor McCauley, thanks for joining us here on New Sound Radio 92 FM.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Jenny Bates and I'm Friends of the Earth London campaigner, and I also work on air pollution for our organisation.
Traffic is part of modern day life in Europe. How does London compare with other European cities?
Well, we're basically one of the very worst for NO2, nitrogen dioxide, in Europe. We're massively over the EU legal limit. The last thing we want to do is add to the problem, which is what is being proposed with these two new river crossings for vehicles.
What river crossings are these?
One is for four more lanes of traffic at the Silvertown area, which is just by Blackwall Tunnel. And there's another proposal for another vehicle crossing at Galleons Reach. And it's just basically would result in much more traffic in the area, and that would mean overall worse congestion in the wider area, and that means a bigger problem for business, bigger problem for anybody that needs to get somewhere on a bus, and overall worse air pollution. We've got to look at better solutions.
And what would those better solutions be?
First of all, when we design, regenerate areas or design new areas, we have to think about reducing the need for people to have to travel unnecessarily. So we have to think about making sure amenities are within easy walking and cycling distance so that people can just easily pop along to their shop and their doctor or whatever. And for longer journeys, we must improve public transport. We're not against having more river crossings, just those for roads. So you could have several walking and cycling bridges, probably for the cost of, you know, these road schemes, because they can be much lighter and cheaper. And the DLR extensions that are possible, multi-stop fast ferries, all sorts of options. What Transport for London have not done is look at a proper package, a whole combination of non-vehicle crossings. And that's what needs to happen to protect our health and to protect local people.
But surely these new river crossings, they'd be good for business, wouldn't they?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think that's what business wants or needs. If we built new river crossings, we would have more traffic in the area, and that means worse congestion overall, and as well as air pollution. And that is not good for business. Business wants people to be attracted to an area that's clean and healthy to live and work in, and they also don't want congestion. And if we have population increase, which is what is expected in the area, then that's all the more reason to capture new journeys on public transport. Not a reason to build these river crossings for vehicles. We have to capture those new journeys on public transport. And if we do that, if we invest in public transport, we will also get some of the people who are currently clogging up the existing road space, who don't really need to be on it, they can be transferred onto new public transport if it's made attractive and accessible and affordable.
So basically what you're saying is get people who are in their cars at the moment onto public transport, that'd free up the roads for business to use current routes.
Exactly. So if you invest in public transport, you're not only capturing new journeys that would be created if you've got new people and new population coming into the area and new jobs, but you're also getting unnecessary journeys off the current road system.
And finally, if there's one thing that could be done to improve air quality in East London, what would that be?
Don't do anything bad and put your money into good stuff. Walking, cycling, public transport, and let's make East London somewhere that we can all feel happy to live in and breathe easily in.
Jenny Bates from Friends of the Earth, thanks for joining us here on New Sound Radio 92 FM.
Thank you very much.
And I think that's something you're going to be hearing more about in over 2014 as well, over the next year. And, of course, we'll be reporting here on New Sound Radio 92 FM on the community. Stay tuned, because we've got another controversial issue coming up, another one that sort of started up last year and is going to run into this year, the closure of fire stations in East London. This has been a really hot issue. Stay tuned.
I don't care what they think, if you're leaving, I'm gonna beg you to stay.
Tune to New Sound Radio 92 FM. This is the Community Hour, and I'm Pete Day, looking back over the last year. Different issues that's going on. And plans to close 12 fire stations and scrap, I don't know, an additional 18 fire engines. 520 fire service people redundant right way across London was a big issue here in East London in 2013. And it seems that East London is a particular target for these cuts, with the plans to shut down fire stations at Bow and Silvertown as well. Also, there are plans to reduce the capacity in Leighton and Leightonstone and Chingford. Now, just before Christmas, a legal challenge was mounted by several London boroughs, including Tower Hamlets and Hackney, and this was rejected by the courts. And it would seem that Boris Johnson, Mayor of London, will push ahead with the controversial plans. Now, New Sound Radio 92 FM, we met up with Ron Dobson, London Fire Commissioner, and asked him, well, what plans they had to keep people in East London safe from fire.
Well, this is our London safety plan. We'd have to do this every 3 years by statute. And this year we're presenting a plan which is designed to make London a safer place, designed to continue the really good work of London firefighters, where we've reduced the amount of calls we attend, the amount of fires that take place in London, and the amount of injuries that people suffer and fire deaths that occur in London over the last 10 years by about 50%. So we made some really good progress. This year we've also got some very difficult budget targets to achieve. So in this year's plan, we're also making some proposals for the reduction in the number of fire stations, the number of fire appliances and the number of firefighters we have in London. Now in doing that, we're seeking though to maintain our targets for attendance standards. So currently in London, we aim to get a fire engine to an incident anywhere in London, whether it be a fire or not, within 6 minutes, and a second appliance to that incident should it be needed within 8 minutes, and we're seeking to maintain those standards and keep them in place.
Now, you say that, but of course, we're talking in terms of 12 fire stations across London being closed, three of them in East London as well. We're talking about Bow, Silvertown and the Kingsland one in Hackney as well. We're talking about 18 fire engines going right away across London. That includes ones in Leighton, Leytonstone and Whitechapel as well. We're talking about losing 525 fires right away across London. This must affect standards, surely.
Well, actually, what we're doing is we're trying to redistribute the cover that's left so that we can still achieve those standards or those targets of 6 and 8 minutes for first and second appliances. Now, in very local areas, local to where fire stations close, then obviously people will see a slight reduction in the standard of attendance because it's very, very close to where a fire station used to be. And our modelling work that we've done, which is very accurate and very robust, actually demonstrates that whilst there will be a slowing down, so the actual first appliance anywhere in London will, at the time, will reduce by about 15 seconds, it will still be well within our 6 minute attendance times target, and the second appliance will still be within 8 minutes.
Hello, my name is Fiona Twycross. I'm a London wide assembly member for the Labour Party and a member of the London Fire Authority. Well, I think the proposed changes in the fire service in London really put the safety and security of Londoners at risk. And I, as a Labour member of the Fire Authority and the London Assembly, with other colleagues, are opposing these. Well, here in East London, in Newham, the areas around the fire stations that will be closing will see a really marked increase in the time it will take for a fire engine to reach an incident.
Seconds do cost lives, I couldn't disagree with that at all. It's also very important though to try and prevent the fires occurring in the first place, because what we also know is that on many occasions, by the time we receive a call where someone gets injured or dies in a fire, that person is either already injured or dead, because actually it's taken too long for the call to get to receive to us, and no matter how quickly we respond, we can't prevent that. So it's really important that the other parts of the plan are also noticed and commented on. So things like us working to try to increase the number of domestic sprinklers in the places where vulnerable people live is really, really important. Whilst the operational proposals around closures of fire stations and reduction in fire engines and firefighters are obviously the most obvious and the most controversial, it's really important that people do look at the rest of the plan, because that's really the way in which we're going to carry on reducing the figures in terms of numbers of fires and fire deaths in London, that we're really keen to continue the downward trend in all those figures.
I think we need to be quite clear that there is a risk involved. For example, around Silvertown Fire Station, the time it will take for a fire engine to reach the area once the fire station goes will increase by over 3 minutes, and we know that the intensity of a domestic fire, for example, can quadruple in just 2 minutes. So this is really an example of where seconds count, and they make a massive difference in what the outcome from a fire can be. So yes, it probably is reasonable to say that in some cases lives may be at risk.
A lot of people said, though, really, this is just financially driven, yeah? If suddenly somebody turned up and said, I'll tell you what, we've got a great present for you here, and you can spend whatever money you like, would you go ahead and close these fire stations?
I would certainly make some changes, because actually
changes would you make? Where would it be different?
Well, what we would do is we would redistribute the way we've got the cover in London already. And also, as a public servant, we need to recognise that the amount of demand is falling considerably. So, you know, we've actually had the lowest number of fires in London last year for 40 years, lowest number of fire deaths in London over the last 10 years, that's reducing considerably. So I do need to make sure that the public money that we spend, people's council tax, is spent appropriately, and that would mean that actually we need to continue to reassess whether or not we've got the right level of cover. Now, we probably wouldn't be looking to close as many fire stations or make as many changes, but I would still be making proposals around change, because it's an evolving process, and London Fire Brigade needs to reflect the way the risk is changing in London, and that's only the right thing to do.
Well, we don't think this is inevitable, and the Labour group and other groups on the Assembly came up with alternatives to the Mayor's plans in the budget. For example, the Mayor is cutting council tax for households in London this year by 1p a day, and we think that Londoners would rather see that money go towards maintaining the level of service we have from the fire service today.
Now, regular listeners to the show, now you may remember reports about the 29 single young mothers who received a letter from East Thames Housing Association saying that they would have to leave their current accommodation at the Focus E15 hostel on Victoria Street in Stratford because of funding cuts. Now, the residents are in a situation where they will be forced to move out of their current home, and that the only realistic option for them would be to move away from the local area to places as far away as Manchester, Hastings or Birmingham. Now, many of the young mothers grew up in Newham and are reluctant to leave their friends and family. New Sound Radio 92 FM, we went down to Stratford Broadway and met up with one of the young mothers caught up in all this. Joined now by Jasmine Stone, one of the Focus E15 young mothers. Can you just tell us what's been happening to the young women down at Focus E15?
Well, I'm one of the mothers from Focus E15, and we all faced an eviction notice. We received the eviction notice on the 21st of August to tell us that we had to be out on the 20th of October. We started up a campaign and we've been fighting against the evictions, and so far they've extended our eviction notice. So we obviously haven't been evicted, but it's still been quite a struggle to get everything we need because they're trying to send us to the privately rented sector and we can't afford to pay for private rented accommodation. The only offers that people have been given are out of London to places like Hastings, Manchester and Birmingham. This is too far for us to go to because we're all under the age of 25 and we all have young children, and it means that if we was to move that far, we wouldn't be able to see any of our family and our children wouldn't even know their grandparents.
So can you just explain, Focus E15, what sort of accommodation is it and who lives there? How many people are involved in all this?
There's 29 young mothers there. It's a hostel. There's a separate mother and baby unit, but there are some mothers and babies in the actual main block as well. In total, there's 210 flats, and we it's just very small for us. It's not very suitable for a child, I'd say.
Okay, why are these evictions taking place?
There's been £41,000 worth of funding that's been cut by Newham Council. So supporting people are not able to fund the mother and baby unit for Focus E15.
What Newham Council, of course, what they say is like, well, you know, they face loads of cuts from the government and things like that. And really, they can't afford this funding anymore. What would you say to the council?
Well, we know that there is properties out there. We know that, we just think they need to sort out the priorities, because some people are being prioritised over mothers and babies, and we're not saying that other people should be put out and homeless, but I think the system needs to be changed and prioritised in the right way.
Just looking at it for you personally then, right, okay, you've got a young daughter. I mean, can you just explain what sort of accommodation the council have offered you or where you stand personally?
Yeah, my daughter's 14 months old, so she's walking and trying to climb everywhere, and at the moment there's no space for her to do anything, but so far I haven't personally been offered by the council yet, but other mothers have been offered in Hastings and places like that, and a few mothers have moved. And it costs a lot to travel back. And
so they've actually moved to Hastings?
Yeah. I know of one mother that's moved so far, but there are some more that moved before us. So, and it just costs so much to travel back to London to see your family. And it's like, obviously with the money that we get, it's hard. And we all want to go back to work. Like, we don't want to stay on benefits all of our life. And so when we do get a property that's privately rented, we won't be able to afford it. We'll be getting less money when we're working because of the high rent costs. So social housing is what we need so we can afford it and look after our children and go back to work. Otherwise, we've got no option but not to go back to work.
I mean, have you looked around for private accommodation?
Yep, I was looking all the time. It is very hard to find someone that will accept benefit payments because nobody wants to take DSS. It is very, very hard. It's been very stressful for all of us, and it's been difficult.
And do they ask for any deposits or anything like that?
Yeah, they ask for the deposit. Newham Council say they will pay the deposit, but to get in contact with them and then them to get in contact with the landlord, it's just so long that the landlord ends up saying no because they have to wait 3 months to get their payment. So no landlord really wants to wait that long because they obviously need the money and they need to get people in as soon as possible. So It is difficult.
Now, of course, you live in Focus C15, which is on Victoria Street in Stratford. I mean, in many ways, it's in the shadow of the Olympic Park, isn't it? Now, I don't know, how does that make you feel, given that what the Olympic authorities, they always promised that at the end of the Olympics, there'd be a legacy of thriving, sustainable communities? How does that sound to you?
It's very disappointing, because when we heard about the Olympics, I was quite excited, and obviously we live right on the doorstep. We saw everything happening, all the people coming over. It was such a nice place to be. And ever since the Olympics stopped, Stratford's turned to a place, it's got worse than what it was before. There's no housing, and we can see all the new houses that have been built in front of us, but apparently there's no housing. It's ridiculous.
And finally, yeah, if there's just one wish, yeah, that could be granted to you, what would that be?
My wish would be to stay locally, around people I know, in a nice, suitable place for my daughter to grow up, and, yeah, for me to be able to afford it.
Jasmine Stone, thanks for joining us here on New Sound Radio 92 FM.
Thank you.
And the Focus E15 Young Mothers, they're still holding out for affordable local accommodation as well. And they're staging a rally outside the East Thames Housing Association offices. That's on West Ham Lane. It's up near Stratford Broadway end of West Ham Lane at 11 o'clock next Monday, the 6th of January. So it's at the East Thames Housing Association on West Ham Lane if you fancy going down there. Stay tuned, because after the break, I'm going to be got a special report on a rather special birthday party that I went to last year. It's a 101st birthday party, and it was for a foot tunnel. Stay tuned. You're tuned to New Sound Radio 92 FM. This is the Community Hour, and I'm Pete Day. Go through some of the issues of last year, 2013. Now, in 2013, I went to a special birthday event. It was no ordinary birthday party, but it was to mark the 101st anniversary of the opening of the Woolwich Foot Tunnel. Now, of course, in recent years, the tunnel has been much neglected, and following a controversial botched restoration project, the historic entrances to the tunnel have been left all covered in scaffolding. Now, the lifts don't work, and it's all in a pretty bad state of repair. However, Greenwich Council, who own and manage the tunnels, under pressure from campaigners, agreed to bring the Thames River crossing back to its former glory and started work in 2013. So, the birthday party organised by the campaigning organisation Fogwaft was both a celebration of the past and a way of marking a way of the start in the restoration project.
Anyone else for another cupcake?
What? Oh, can I have one of them? Can I have one?
Yeah, of course you can.
Oh, 101 years. Cupcakes. Oh, yeah. Oh, do one of them. Oh, delicious. That's what we like. This is the sort of Simon I like going out on, you know.
Is it what, when you get a cupcake? Especially a 101-year-old one, aren't they?
They're not 101 years old, the cupcakes, are they?
No, they're fresh yesterday.
Joined now by Ian Bloor from the campaigning organisation Fogwaft. Well, what exactly is Fogwaft?
We're the Friends of Greenwich and Woolwich Foot Tunnels, Fogwaft. And we have been campaigning to get the new refurbishment work started, and we've had a very good meeting with the council this week, and they are starting the works next week. We've been lucky, but we've also put a lot of pressure on the council to get the works underway. So that's the really good news, and we're celebrating partly that good news, but also we're celebrating the 101st birthday of the Woolwich Foot Tunnel. 101 years ago to this very date and time, the Woolwich Foot Tunnel was open. The only difference today is that in those days they had lifts to go down to the tunnel end, and today we won't. But there will be new lifts eventually.
Of course, it's in a terrible state. I mean, looking across there, we're just standing by the Woolwich Ferry, looking across at the entrance to the tunnel. There's all plastic sheeting, there's corrugated iron. It's in a terrible state. How's it been allowed to get to this terrible state?
This is the remains of the refurbishment project, which started 4 years ago and went sour. Everyone admits it went sour, and the contractors were dismissed. All the scaffolding was left. The Both tunnels were left in a terrible state. At least the Greenwich Tunnel has lifts, although they are sometimes problematic. But on Monday, the work should begin to actually complete the refurbishment. Yes, it looks terrible, but we are celebrating perhaps the future today as well as the past.
And of course, the past. Here we're talking about 101 years. Do we know anything much about the opening ceremony of the tunnel back 101 years ago?
We owe the tunnels to a great Labour leader called Will Crooks, and he pushed for a lot of crossings across the river below Tower Bridge, basically connecting the East End with Woolwich. It was opened by the Lieutenant General Lord Chalesmore, who, believe it or not, was chairman of the London County Council in those days. And his entourage, there were lots of bigwigs in top hats. We've got one top hat here today. They opened the tunnel, went across the river by tunnel, and then they all came back on the ferry. And we aim to do the same today.
So we're going to go down the tunnel,
under the river, and then down to the ferry and come back on the ferry.
Should we go then?
Let's go now, yes. It's the only thing that's missing today that they had 101 years ago. They had lifts, and we don't today. So we're going to walk down this side and up on the other side.
Of course, it's a long way down these stairs, isn't it? I bet it's even further on the way up, isn't it?
Is it? God. Tell me that now.
It probably just seemed like...
Going up to worse.
Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday dear tunnel, happy birthday to you.
Hip hip! Hooray! Hip hip!
Hooray!
Another one!
Hooray!
And from one party to another, it's for me one of the highlights of the year was when I made my way to a special event down in Canning Town. It promised to create a village green in an area which, you, I don't know, if you've been down there at all lately, it's more like a giant building site than anything else, isn't it? Well, when I arrived, I was greeted by, well, not so much a tranquil village green, but a full-on East End party. And what's more, what's happening, it was all happening underneath the Canning Town flyover, where I met up with someone rather special. Joined now by singer, songwriter, entertainer, and of course, actor Kenny Lynch. Kenny, what are you doing here tonight?
I'm just come down because it's where I was born, and they asked me to do it. I didn't realise it was going to be like this, but I'm going to try and do something for them anyway.
Did you ever think you'd be performing under the Canning Town flyover?
I tell you what, when I was born, this thing wasn't even a dream. You know, but I lived here till I put the flyover in. So I lived in Poplar with my mum until I cracked it on the record scene, and then I moved into Bayswater, and then I went to Chelsea.
How's it changed around here?
Around here, I tell you how it's changed. I came down to see a fight with Frank Warren at the arena, and I realised I was 400 yards from where I was born, and I had no idea where I was. It was just incredible. I came out of there and I got into that tunnel to go out, to go back to Henley, where I live now. And I didn't know where to go. So I just saw a sign for Mile End. So I went to Mile End. And when I got there, I knew where I was.
Are you still a West Ham supporter, though?
Absolutely.
You died
in the wall.
Doing well so far this year.
Yeah, doing very well this year. Sam's doing a good job. I've known Sam for 40 years, the new manager. You know, when he was up in Bolton, when he was... because I used to travel with Bobby Moore and the team sometimes, and you know, go to away games. I can't be bothered to drive all the way out to Manchester for one game. If I'm in the back, you know, having a few beers with the lads, I don't mind that.
How did you first get into show business?
I got into show business because my sister Maxine, she's dead now, God rest her soul, was a singer, and she was singing with a dance band, and she told the band leader that I could sing, and he said, "Oh, well, why don't you come and do something? Do a couple of buskers." That means that they ain't got no arrangements for you, you know, with this. And I did that, and I worked with her for a year and a half, and then one of the boys in the band took me out to be a pro. That was what they call semi-pro around here. It was Johnny Dalton's band, was a semi-pro band. But then I joined Bob Miller, and then I joined, you know, people like Ted Heath, and I did 10 years of that. And then Shirley Bassey found me in a club one night singing, and said, "You should make a record," and took me to EMI, and the rest is history.
And of course, you perform with the best. I mean, you was actually topping in the bill with the Beatles, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I was. Yeah, I had some great times in there, but I was young then, so I don't, you know, it's not so. They're good memories.
We won't tell too many stories, though. It's a family show.
Yeah, okay, right. That's good.
Finally, though, someone who's just starting out, yeah, in show business, yeah, what piece of advice would you give them?
Piece of advice I would do, be yourself. Don't take off anybody else. Just to, if you're a good singer or a good act, just do your act. Don't do anybody else's stuff. So be original. That's the pleasure.
Kenny Leach, thanks for joining us on New Sound.
Cheers, thank you. Just calling me on. Listen, if you want to dance, dance. Anybody wants to get out there with their loved one or somebody else's loved one, do your thing. It is very nice to be down here where I was born with the real posh people. So we're going to do a few songs for you.
When this old world starts getting me down and people are just too much for me to face,